It's Channel 1 over. Channel 1 over. And the first visit with Juanita by herself. Sunday afternoon, 15th November, 1970. Channel 1 over. Channel 1 over. And the first visit, Juanita by herself. Sunday afternoon, 15th of November, 1970. Sunday afternoon, 15th November, 1970. Yesterday, Saturday, she came over with Ralph. And that was a memorable visit. This is the beginning of Juanita's visit, her first visit, the 15th of November, 1970, Channel 1 over. This is Channel 1 over, and the beginning of Juanita's visit, her first visit by herself.
Could you bring a cup of coffee?
I'd be glad to have a cup of coffee.
Okay.
I just told Faye I left this lady visiting with Aunt Emmy and Big Mama, and so I'm trying to let her get acquainted. I told her yesterday when we went in to talk with her that, you know, I'd pick her up and bring her out, and if she wanted to stay for lunch, she'd be welcome to stay, and then, you know, but she's enjoying herself, so she doesn't need to get back till about 5 or 5:30. At time enough to keep
good.
Rosemary's kids. She belongs
good
to this
fine.
Gourmet group, and
yeah.
Tonight's their night for dinner. So she's Rosemary's busy cooking this weekend, getting her dish ready.
Well,
I was just telling Faye about this lady that I have over there. I don't know whether you know Dr.
Let me tell you, I'm not into that lady right now. I want to know about Ralph.
Lord, no, Ralph.
He really talked, can't he? How had I missed him?
He just hadn't been there at the time. He's been married to this stupid woman. That guy, like Papa used to say about Paul and Ralph and their women.
Yes, he's the same way.
Paul went off the deep end and wound up with this woman he's married to. And I guess you met her over there the other day. I'm sure you did.
Well, let me tell you.
I want to know about Ralph. Now, where did he get that cut flare of his?
He's always had it, as long as I've known him.
I've
known him since they moved down here in 1939, and I got acquainted with him. Paul and I were both about 14 years old at that. No, I guess we weren't 12 years old in 39. We were born in 27.
Gee whiz.
And so Ralph was married to a brunette by the name of Sarah. And Ralph went into the service, into the Navy. And
he went from the CC into the Navy?
Well, he went from the CC. He was out of the CC and worked in Jacksonville, was employed, went into the Navy. And this was at the time of World War II. And I guess he must have gone into the Navy somewhere about 40.
Yeah, well, he said last 41. Night, you know, in the Navy.
Mm-hmm. And he was in the Navy for a number of years. And Sarah, she just played it big while he was gone, and she just run around with anybody.
She didn't,
they had no children.
He didn't cook in the Navy.
Yeah, he was cook.
Is that right?
He was cook on ship in the Navy.
Well, good Lord. Good Lord.
He's always cook. That's his job. Well, then after he got out, and
well,
finally
Phil,
he and...
Let me tell you. You follow me. I'm telling you, really. Now,
yeah.
You're sure. Okay. I don't care about the information. I'm sure. Big Mama then would expect him to eat plenty when he come over there.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
sure she expected him to eat plenty when he came. She expected everybody to eat plenty when they came over there.
He said unless she eat enough for 3 men, she wasn't happy.
I fed him breakfast yesterday, went down to Gene Robinson's and got some of his homemade sausage that he makes. And we had sausage and eggs for breakfast, and we'd gotten up about, from the table about 9 or 9:30 and come out there. At 11:30, she wanted me to fix him a plate for him to eat lunch. And I said, I just gave him breakfast.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fix him lunch. But he was in the kitchen fixing his own plate.
Well,
but see, even if she can't eat, she's gonna want she wants everybody else around her to be eating.
Can he do that? Can he just eat it?
He sure did. He sure did. Well, go right back in there and ate a big. When he came over here, we'd just gotten up from eating, and it must have been just about 12 then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't much after 12 we drove over here. And he'd already eaten a lunch. Well, he'd had a breakfast
just a little bit of thing.
He'd had a breakfast and a lunch before 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
And he had a big breakfast. I fixed, he had 2 eggs and toast and preserves and sausage.
And he's still got a pretty nice figure. Did anybody else eat like that?
They all eat like that. You should see Skeet eat. You met Skeet, Madeleine's husband. He eats like a pig, but I don't think he does it at home. I asked him. I asked Madeleine. I said, how can you afford to buy groceries for him?
Because
I know they've always been budget minded and this sort of thing, and I know he doesn't eat like that at home. But he'll eat anywhere else. Anybody else's house, he'll eat like
pigs.
If it's there, he enjoys it. And the Marguerite's husband, Lloyd, he's a big eater too, except he had a heart attack, and he's pretty limited as to the type of food that he can have. You never even seen such eaters. Now, Aunt Emmy is not like that. Aunt Emmy's, they don't eat like that.
She never did?
Well, they've always joined in, the crowd, but Aunt Emmy's one that she considers her stomach and her feelings, and she doesn't want to be that uncomfortable. That's like the way I am. I'll eat what I feel like I want, but I'm not going to eat until I'm uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And miserable from overeating. I don't like to eat that well.
It's been so long since I overate. You just do get miserable. It gets stuffed, you can't hardly breathe.
Like they were talking about food over there, and I said, food was the least of my worries. If it was enough, I told Bema, I said, I wasn't worried about it, worried about whether it'd be enough food, and people kept coming in, and Coral was seeing the cars up there, and of course, there was some of the family that was there that I really didn't expect to see. Papa's sister's daughter came, and her husband, and 5 children, and Big Mama was pleased, they're witnesses, and they knew this man that was conducted the service out there, because they had met him up in Thomasville, Georgia, Cairo, Georgia, and they got into this group when they lost a child of theirs. And they had 6 children, one of them died, and when they lost this child, it was shortly after that a witness called on them, and so they are members of that group up there. So, Big Mama, this pleases Big Mama. This is not her kin, folks. This is on Papa's side. This is Papa's niece, Papa's daughter's child. But she wasn't aware that Big Mama was a witness.
Yeah.
So,
Let me tell you.
Her service, though, got some comments. Somebody called her whose wife is a witness, who's gone along with trying to get the husband in, all these years, and the husband worked with Papa at the university, and he came to that service. And he came home commenting to his wife about, different things. And she called Big Mama to tell her that this is the first time he's ever seen the light.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh.
Well, that would make her feel good.
Feel good that one person was reached by that service.
Yes. And he had worked with...
He had worked with Papa.
Papa.
Came to the funeral. The husband came to the funeral because of his association with Papa.
Yeah.
But the wife had been with the witness group for long, many years, but the husband, she had a closed mind to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he came home yesterday, from the service, commenting, and she called Big Mama to tell her what it meant to her.
Yeah.
So,
But
Skeet, her nephew, Madeleine's husband, he made a comment he wasn't listening. Now, Ralph said it sure gave you food for thought, lots to think about.
Oh, really?
And this friend of his from Tampa, Orion Powell, said the St. Orion Faye came to Big Mama and, you know, things brought out that hadn't thought about. I don't know what, Faye was raised in Tampa, and I don't know whether she's Catholic or not. I'm not sure. Don't know about Orion. But he has a nightclub, and this entertainment is his business down there. They have a nightclub on the causeway, and he's just gotten into half interest in the Mullet Inn there on the causeway, one of the restaurants there in town. So Big Mama's, you know, her mind is satisfied in some mm-hmm. respects. This is what she wanted, and of course she keeps saying this is what Papa would have wanted. Well, I'm not convinced in my mind. Papa tolerated a lot of things, you know. He went along with her. He didn't disagree because he didn't like, he wasn't one to argue. But,
He said, I heard him say one time, that he was glad that Mabel had gotten where she could do her studying.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first went over there, well, at least long towards the first, when I just ducked in every now and then,
mm-hmm.
she'd have, you know, have all them books up there
mm-hmm.
and just working away on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid to bring it up, afraid it, you know, it wouldn't switch a little bit every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I'd order some beans and everything else. But she was in it, and I remember he said
mm-hmm.
that. He was glad that she was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, what connection is there, then, between this and all that fine food?
Between what and the fine food?
The witnessing.
Nothing. There's no connection whatsoever.
Well, now, there has to be.
Because when she got to, I mean, she was in the fine food business before she ever knew a witness.
Yes, but she never forsook the fine
no,
food.
No, she did not. Although Dr. Laura's husband was a naturopath,
yes.
And they relied on Dr. Jones and his treatment, his methods of treatment that had nothing to do with the medical doctor.
Yes.
And you see all those vitamins up there. They're those nature vitamins, and they're things that years ago Dr. Jones had prescribed certain conditions that Papa had.
Now, you never went into her political beliefs.
Political? She ain't got any political belief except there's no politics involved. Like, she wouldn't have anything to do with that flag that the VA wanted to furnish. She told him to keep it. Told Paul not to take it. Paul said, well, you could, you know, bring it home. She won't see it.
Yeah.
She won't have any part of that flag.
Yeah.
But that's a closed mind, because that flag is secondary to God. It's not, well, it's important because you are a citizen of the United States.
Let me tell you, Juanita, you know, this is not just because at all. This is reasoning. That's what you want to do in a broad way. There is a connection, and you carry it over. And politics is something that belittles a man.
See, her politics, since she's known about Jehovah's Witnesses, she's never had any mind for politics.
Even so, that's done it with considerable gusto. Let me tell you. Tell me about the. Help me out. I don't want to.
I think what we were talking about, Juanita, and one of the things we were talking about trying to see was, what is it that gives them such gusto, Big Mama and Big Papa? I mean, you know, the whole sweet. She just got, they both had something that is just extraordinary.
Yes.
It's a kind of
a magnetism to draw people to them.
Well, it's a bigness,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Like Ralph said, you know, she cooked for a large number.
Well,
and
this
she
is true. She
you,
well, I know. I remember Mr. Shaw. Did you know the Shaws from down here at Evanston?
I guess no. I don't
well,
know.
They had the they owned the house, built the house that Marilyn's in,
mm-hmm.
and he was the agent down there at the depot until they closed this station here. But Mr. Shaw, and that was about the only, they didn't have a telephone in their home, and so anybody wanted to call them, they called the station, Mr. Shaw would get the message, they'd come to the telephone. Well, she'd get on the telephone, you know, and her, just like, you know, you all come and insist on you coming, you know, and all of you come and all this sort of thing. And then she'd get off the telephone and she'd say, well, I sure hope they don't come. Mr. Shaw would say, well, you know, with an invitation like that, I'd feel like I was offending you if I didn't come, you know. But this is the way she's always been, so yeah. Insistent that you're, you know, everybody's welcome and all of you come and all this sort of thing. So people didn't feel like they were in the way by just walking in with the house full.
When I first started over there, I stay, overstay, because I don't, you know, try.
Because you stay more than 5 minutes?
Yeah. I'd overstay. And I'd get up to leave, and you know, she'd say, now, it's just no sense in you going off now. I feel sort of
guilty at leaving at that particular time, huh?
Yes. And I'd just sit down and stay longer. And that wasn't my cue at all.
Your cue was to leave.
Well, now, that's, there's something to that, isn't there?
Yeah, there's something to it. Something to it. But it's just like if I stay out there till 10 o'clock and we start home, well, you all don't have to hurry off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now that's Georgia. I think.
Must be. There said something about a friend of mine that calls out there, and if I'm there, she'll call. And if not, she'll get in a conversation with Big Mama. So they're talking about that friend of mine that really could talk. I said, yeah, she's from Georgia. And they looked at me and said, well, you're not from Georgia and you talk.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's in a way, it occurred to us in a way that a lot of these churches around here are pretty panty-waist, you know.
Yes.
Well, this
and
this
it's just too panty-waist for Big Mama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, she just doesn't go in for lukewarm stuff.
Well, you know, I don't either, really.
No.
I know I started to Parkview Baptist up on Northwest 13th Street. And I went out there in the Sunday school class, the women's adult Sunday school class, got in there where you only have about 25 minutes allotted to Sunday school. And what were they discussing? Just plain old gossip. One woman was telling about getting so angry with her husband that particular week something had come up, and she'd baked him a cake. But he came in and she got so mad with him, she threw the cake out in the backyard. And I thought, well, now how stupid. I mean, people that don't have any more control over themselves than this. And I didn't go back out there with them. I didn't want to spend my time sitting in there discussing petty little. First place, didn't have a husband to talk about. So what point was there in sitting in there? If you go in there and you're going to have 25 minutes to study about a particular subject, that's a little enough time to cover, try to cover.
You know,
a little bit of material.
Yeah. I think it's sort of reaction that.
Of course, I studied with the witnesses in Crystal River.
Well,
I studied with the witnesses.
They study. Yeah.
I learned what the Lord's Prayer meant when you were, you know, from taking it from the beginning and going through it. It's the first time I'd ever understood, really, what you're praying for.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They've got the right attitude, haven't
mm-hmm.
they? Now, if their lights are dim, that's not their fault.
No. But I think one of the most interesting talks that I've ever heard, or the most interesting talk on the Bible, was one that Mr. Emerson's son, oldest son, is a witness, and he's out in California. And he's been in service for many, many years. And Clayton gave a talk down in Dunellen, and it was entitled Heaven's Wars. Peace on Earth Follows, and it was about it was all on Revelations,
mm-hmm.
Battle of Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
That talk was 1 hour long from the time he started, and it was as though when he finished, he hadn't been talking 10 minutes.
Yeah, and this has been going on all the time since they've been back here
been
here.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when she got in touch with.
But see,
Laura.
He was in Ocala. He was in Ocala then before he ever moved to New Mexico to go in service in New Mexico, and then now they're in California.
Who?
Clayton Emerson, the oldest.
You think about Miss Patterson when it began from when she was down here?
No, Big Mama began sometime.
Well, I know when it began.
Yeah.
You know when it began.
Well, yes,
she told you when it began, huh? You probably know better when it began than
well,
I do.
Well, it's this great spirit, though.
Juanita, let me tell you, pick up something that we talked about with
Ralph.
Yes. Now he has a feel for these things, and he don't like for words, does he?
Not a bit. Not a bit.
No, sir.
He has a wide range of talents.
Oh, has he?
Well, I mean, he's able to to cook. You know, his business now is he's been in the small loan business, and right now he's working with this North America Acceptors, which I guess you'd call it overwrites the finance companies. You know, they get their money from up here, and he's on this level where they're sort of the blanket type business. And he used to work with Jim Walter Corporation in Tampa, and his job was the mortgage foreclosures. He handled those.
You mean he's mean?
Well, he's business. He can collect.
He can.
Yes, he can.
What do you know about that?
Yes, he can. Uh-huh. He's business.
What do you know about that?
Yes, sir. He collects the money that's owed to the company. And he's a darn good one.
What have you seen of that?
What have I seen of it?
Oh, I heard tell.
Just heard some of his experiences, you know.
Such as?
Listen, I'm not too good at recollecting. Some of these things just sort of...
Yeah.
Just
it just
crossed my
because
mind,
just
but
never
I don't
have seen
the,
him before.
Yeah. Well, like he was telling you yesterday, he used to take Paul down to CCC camp, and he's just a kid, and look after him and let him follow him around and with him, and that's where they really got acquainted, was over at Fernandina when the Pattersons would be down at their cottage there, and the CCC boys go down to the casino, and they just got attached to each other. Like you said, he adopted them, Paul spent a lot of time with him.
He's
done everything anybody's done. You name it, he's done.
Now he'd have to talk about that.
Yeah. Him and his women. He used to bring some of the damnedest women up here to the farm, and of course, he's only been married twice. And then when he married this girl, you know how old she was?
29.
No, she wasn't 23. She wasn't 22, 23 years old.
Yeah.
She had this little girl about 3 years old. I think Debbie must have been about 3 years old.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's still with her. They have three boys, and he's still living with her. But here he's 55 years old, and like I was kidding him, I said, I'm only 43 and a grandmother, and he's a long ways from being a grandfather. He's going to be an old man before he's a grandfather.
Yeah.
I said, you should be enjoying grandchildren.
But now he'd bring his women in over here, too.
Yes, sir, he could bring his women in over there. He did.
Well, what do you know?
You see, the thing that just surprises us is, you know, when you... It's all the different life that the Pattersons have lived.
Well,
they see so much of it.
They haven't excluded any. See, in my time,
She's had sickness, you know, like this little old man that was they say he was just a tiny little man. They call him Uncle Harrison.
Yes.
You've heard her talk about Harrison.
Yes.
And he was a friend of Papa's.
Yeah.
He was Papa's friend. And she nursed him through his illness where he had creeping paralysis. And I was asking her last night, she talked about taking care of Harrison, you know, and, you know, it was a night and day thing like I had with Papa. And he was only 54 years old when he died. I didn't realize he was that young, but I guess at that time she must have been in her 30s, maybe. But this was some real good friend of Papa's.
Now that's yes, I've heard him talk about Harrison, and he come down here with him.
No, I don't think he came down here with him. The mother and the father, I mean, Papa's mother and father came with him when they came to Florida. They lived with him.
Yeah.
Grandma and Grandpa Patterson, they lived with him.
Well, they came
with him. Mm-hmm. They moved down here in this house at Evanston. And when they moved up here, they built the bedroom over on that side on the back was Grandma and Grandpa's bedroom. They had bedroom and bath over there, and they kept them down
there.
They
always mowing
for them? Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, they kept them and looked after them all through the years, almost from the time they were married, that she had the old man and the old lady.
Well, look, Juanita.
Had the responsibility of them. And then had Paul. And then at times had, you know, Madeline's husband got sick, and she had them in the home in Waycross. And of course, Skeet stayed in the hospital in Atlanta for a long time, and then there were times that they had Aunt Emmy and Uncle Paul in the house with them. Their house has been a home to many of the family. But you know, the sad part about it is none of them remember. They don't seem to remember the things that they've done for them over the years, you know. Of course, Aunt Emmy is looking after. She's doing, you know, what she can to look after Big Mama. And, of course, Big Mama and Aunt Emmy is so close that Aunt Emmy can... I mean, Big Mama... She's a domineering person. See, she can get Aunt Emmy upset by some of the things. She can talk to Aunt Emmy in a way she can't talk to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And she can get by with it. I think she can with Aunt Emmy. Well, Aunt Emmy won't cross or anything, but it upsets Aunt Emmy some of the things she'll come up with sometimes, you know, and some of the demands she'll make and this sort of thing. But I think she's sort of getting settled down now. I think she realizes she's going to have to...
Well, you know,
what
I
I'm trying to do now is get her acquainted with this woman and get her... the woman's made up her mind, I think, that she could like it out here.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's...
She's already told me that,
well,
you know, she can come next Sunday. I don't know whether you know the Nelsons. He's over in... His office is up on fourth floor in the University College building. He's in the C4... on the math, comprehensive math department. But anyway, he and his wife are going to Atlanta to a convention next week, and she's obligated herself to take care of their three children. So she won't be available until next Sunday to come out here. But if I can just get Big Mama brought around
mm-hmm.
where she'll agree to it, and then I think we've got this thing for the time being. And then the next thing is if the woman likes it well enough to stay. Now, her daughter is the wife of the chairman of the math department, and she came down from Charleston to spend a couple of weeks. Well, I guess Rosemary's brother was sort of, they had it in mind, well, if she comes down there, try to get her to stay. And so she has a home in Charleston, but they got her in an apartment down the street from Rosemary over on the boulevard. And she's worked for the past 18 years, but she hasn't been able to find any type of permanent job in Gainesville, the type of thing that, you know, that she can do. She's worked as a salad maker, but like she said, when her husband died, she wasn't trained or prepared for, you know, any type of work in particular. So for the last 18 years, she's been a salad maker. And so, like I told Rosemary the other day when she told me that her mother still hadn't found anything, and I said, well, then do you think she might be interested in this type of thing? She said, well, it sounds like an ideal arrangement. But she had about made up her mind that the 10th of December she'd go back to Charleston. She'd stay until then, but she'd go back. And I said, well, maybe we can get her out in the country and she can meet some folksy type people.
Mm-hmm.
She might decide that she'll stay.
That's what we sort of wanted to see.
So
yeah.
This is what I said to her, and she's Methodist. So I said, this is all Methodist community down here, the people
uh-huh.
that drop in to see Big Mama. And I said, the telephone's there. She can talk with Rosemary.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I told her I'll be glad just for her to feel free to call me when she wants to go in, you know, in the evening that she wants to go in town, or the weekends she wants to go in. And, I mean, she could visit with Rosemary, but as far as living in the home with her, Rosemary's got four boys. The oldest one's 13, the youngest one's 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's not a good arrangement for her to have to be in the home with those four boys and, you know, every day.
We'll just cross our fingers and hope this works, because it'd be a great help, not, I mean,
yeah.
to you.
If
and,
big,
and
if
and
Big
Mama
can make up her mind that she's going to have somebody with her.
Night and
now, the woman is very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought her out this morning. I told her yesterday, Paul and I went in and met her yesterday and talked with her, and told her before she made any, you know, commitment or decision or anything, we want her to come out here and meet Big Mama, see what the situation is and location. Big Mama to meet her and then make a decision as to whether she thought she'd like to try it. So I picked her up this morning, the kids did, and brought her out, and I said, now, you can stay for lunch if you like, and, you know, and whenever you get ready to go home, feel free. So she says she doesn't need to be back till about 5:30 to take care of Rosemary's kids for them to go to gourmet dinner tonight. So she's already told me, you know, she'll come out next Sunday, that she, if it wasn't for taking care of Rosemary's kids tonight, she could stay tonight. You know, and she has this babysitting deal during the week this week, but after that, well, she's... So, may just have her for a week or two or three, and then on the other hand, of course, Big Mom was telling her about the Thanksgiving dinner down here, how everybody got together and went to the park for Thanksgiving dinner.
Yes.
And the whole community, you know. And
that might interest her.
And so...
Now she can take part in that community.
I was fixing to say, maybe we'll get Big Mama down there this year. If we just, you know, just bring her for, drive a car down there. She could sit in the car.
That's right.
And I think it'd be good for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, last year they went to Albany.
Oh,
yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, they went up to Georgia. That was their last trip to Georgia. Last November was the last time they went.
You know, thinking about Ralph sitting over there, one of the things that I had that right off, I thought, you know, he's got some of the same sort of flair, and he's talking as Mr. Patterson.
See, like he said, you know, I was telling him about the guy, he said, I've been hearing Papa stories for, of course, he calls him Pop.
Uh-huh.
Pop and Mom's what he always called them. That, of course, where the Big Mama got started was Patsy. You met Patsy.
Mm-hmm.
Patsy's the one that started Big Mama.
Yeah.
And, of course, my kids come along, and they just continue with the Big Mama bit, Big Mama and Papa. But Patsy's the one that started that. But those boys used to bring Patsy from Jacksonville down here, you know, when she was a baby, a little tiny child. And one time Paul and Sebe, and Emmy's son, were coming from Jacksonville. They had her in the car, and she was a little tiny thing. And they were working on the road from that cutoff from Gainesville down Main Street out to 441. And they were constructing that in there, and they weren't letting people through, you know, and they stopped them, and they weren't going to let them through, and Patsy got out there and cussed them out, little old tiny thing, and the man turned around, he said, well, go on through. But that Patsy wouldn't cuss in front of her mother, but she'd get down at the barn and was Papa, and she'd cuss up the street.
I need to put a little more hot water in that stuff.
No, I have. Just clean it. I don't need any more coffee.
How could I get in touch with Ralph?
I'd have to get you his address. He lives in Tucker, Georgia.
What I mean to say is, how could he get in touch with me? I mean, you know, talk some more.
Well, I tell you, when he calls, I'll give him your number. At his office, they have watch lines. Doesn't cost him a thing to call out of state. And he was calling down here the day after. Now, Paul called up there, you know, that morning, and he talked to Ethel, answered the phone, and Ethel told Ralph, he said, it's Paul. And he says, oh, no, because he expected, you know, Paul called him at that hour of the morning, because this was early. Ralph was one of the first people that Paul called, or the first person, I guess, and it was... we got the phone call at 2, and it wasn't too much after that before he was on the phone calling Ralph. But Ralph said it didn't hit him until he got to the office.
Yeah.
And then the people at the office tried to get him to go home, and he said, no, just let him alone. He said, just let me alone. He said, I just never have had to face anything like this before. And Big Mama says, but he's lost his mother and his father. She remembers when his mother and father died.
Yeah.
And that he came to their house. And they thought they had him convinced to go to his father's funeral, that he wasn't going to go. And they told him that he should go. His father lived in Tampa, or out from Tampa, near Ruskin. And said they, you know, that she never did know whether he did or he didn't, but he left their house, and she she assumed that he went to his father's funeral, but he said he just never had to face anything like this before. And so he was on the phone calling, and he called, of course, Faye and Tample, Faye and Ori and Powell, real good friends of Ralph. That's where Papa got acquainted with them, as he brought them to the farm. He brought Orion to the farm before they were married. And then Orion was going with Faye, and Faye had been to the farm before they were married. And then, of course, since they've been married, they have three children now, and they've kept in touch. And they always send cards on Mother's Day and Mother's Day and Father's Day. There's always a card from Faye and Orion. And so they were real upset too. But I called them the other morning myself. But Ralph called them, and Faye, she was upset about it. And Ralph, he was calling Faye. He called back, and he talked to somebody. He called and wanted to talk to me. And Paul asked me, he said, how did Ralph sound to you? Did he sound like he was drunk? I said, no. Of course, we didn't think about him being on the watch line, you know, and all he had to do was pick up and dial.
That's right.
That, you know, as far as long-distance calls, well,
yeah,
he could talk to whoever he wanted to, because he took some of our names back from flowers that came from some of Papa's family up in that area, Tucker, and I mean around Chamblee, Georgia, to get addresses, you know, from up there and call them back down. He said he'd just call back and give us the addresses so we could send cards. Should you get off in half an hour?
He just sounds like he just went full of stories.
I'll guarantee you, if he gets back down here, he'll be back over here. He knows where you live, and he enjoyed you just as much as you enjoyed him.
You know, just that drinking moonshine out of his shell.
Or sitting with Big Papa from sun up until past sundown and just talking.
Well, he could. He could. Of course, you know, they used to come, you know, Pop and Big Mom would come down to the house. Well, Paul would get his daddy in the car, and off they'd go. You know, he'd take his daddy down to his office, and they'd sit down there and talk for hours. They'd be back at mealtime, you know, and of course, Big Mom was sitting there on pins and needles. She wanted to see some of Paul, too. But Paul would have his daddy off, and she'd be left there. Wasn't a thing she could do about it. But you need not think she liked it.
Oh, I can imagine it.
But see, that's the only way Paul could get to talk to his daddy, was to get him off by himself.
Sure. Sure.
And just like Ralph and Papa get off together. Well, you've had him off. You all stayed over your limit too, didn't you?
Yeah.
You all had Big Mom on pins and needles many a time. From taking Papa off and riding around the countryside.
That's right.
She didn't tell you off when you brought him back?
No.
She didn't?
Well, you know, you could tell.
You knew. You knew whether she...
15 minutes.
You knew whether she liked it or not. You could pretty well tell she didn't like it.
But you know, once or twice, she'd say, when she knew she couldn't go, she'd say, it's good to come.
She would like for him to get out, you know. Yeah, she'd like for him to get away from the house for a while, because you know, you were over there that morning, and that afternoon when I left, well, just before I left to go to Orlando, I was getting ready to leave, and Mary and Paula took him and carried him over to Mama's to see Mary's calves and Mama's calves over there. So he'd been out for that little ride that afternoon. But it's just like she's saying, he, you know, for a long time he'd been where he couldn't sleep at night. That sometimes, he had told me up there in the hospital, sometimes he'd take as many as 3 capsules during the night, sleeping capsules. That it had been difficult for him to sleep for a long time. But I think it's best that he was not confined to a bed or to a chair to the extent that he could not, do for himself.
That's right.
Hard enough to see him there in the hospital, And he'd tell me, you know, he didn't think he'd... He told me in intensive care the first couple of days he was in there, he said something about Big Mama's condition, that her condition, there may be something they could do for her, but there wasn't anything they could do for him, what he had wrong with him.
He could have that. What was it? He said he just...
My joints get stiff when I sit down alone, about 10 minutes.
You're older than I am.
I need to get up.
I got to run on back over there. I will have overstayed my limits, you know.
Let me tell you, Juanita, before you go, now, you came of age around 1940. I mean, constantly you got to know what is going on around then.
1940?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can remember some things prior to that.
Yeah. But,
And then there's some things since then that I don't remember too well. And there's some things I'd like to forget, just blot out of my mind, but somehow they don't go away.
Well, I'll tell you.
You know a solution for that? You know a way to block out things that have happened that you just don't want to ever remember anymore?
All I know is just partial solutions. Every now and then you can block them out, and every now and then they come back.
No matter what happens, they come back.
You know something, Guy? During these last 2 days, you know, and of course I've always had this feeling about this woman that Paul's been married to, that I just never wanted to see her again because I was associated with her rather closely.
Yes, I know.
Before this all happened.
Yeah.
And I just never imagined Paul for being the fool that he... But it was not that. It was that he needed psychiatric help and he was not willing to admit that he needed it. Because he told me about a year ago, it was about 4 years there, that he couldn't account for the things that he did, that he should have been in the hospital.
Oh,
really? This is what I told him the time he was filing for divorce. I said, I'd rather see you spend $1,000 on a doctor than on a lawyer. And he said, I don't need a doctor. I said, well, you need a doctor a damn sight worse than you need a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I was not going to force the issue to try to bring, you know, force him into psychiatric care to the extent that I had to produce evidence and all this sort of thing, because it would have been, you know, that would have been the end if you'd tried to force something. But anyway, my feeling has always been I never want to see her again.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even so much as say hello to her. And so she brings herself down here, you know, these 2 days. So I stayed away. I stayed completely away.
Mm-hmm.
The nieces and all were insisting that I come on out there anyway. And I said, no, it is not bothering me not to be there. I said, now, were she not there, I would be there. But I said, Big Mama has Medley, she has Marguerite, Aunt Emma's there, and the others. And I said, she doesn't really need me now. I said, I'll be there later.
Mm-hmm.
Like Paul said to me, he said, when you're needed. I said, right. And he knew how I felt about Marie. And so, like I was telling Ralph, I mean, I've never felt calmer in my life than I did those 2 days. Just completely calm within myself. And I don't know why. I can't explain why I felt as calm as I did. But she didn't bother me that she was out there. I mean, if she felt like this was her place and this is where she should be, then I didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I really
didn't
need to be there.
Anybody.
But she, I mean, I was completely calm about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't upset me at all. Because like I told him, Paul told me that there would be a place for me and the children with the family. And I said, well, Paul, where is she going to be? And he said, well, I've told her that she will be there as a spectator only. She doesn't belong with the family. I said, well, now she insists on being with the family. I said, now I won't be. But I said, don't worry about that because that's not going to bother me either. I said, it doesn't bother me if I'm standing behind all the rest in the back row. That's not going to bother me. So anyway, when I got there the other day, Medley came to get me, to take me over to a seat. Well, we came back to the house, and she was inside. And I sat down under the carport. Of course, Ralph insisted on me coming on back out there then, not going over to Mary's and waiting for Paul and she left. Of course, Paul was going to let me know when they were leaving so I could go back out there. I mean, Paul was on my side, not her side, but he was having to put up with her.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I came on back and I sat under the carport, and I did see most of the family, you know, before they got away, and got to speak to them. So somehow I had just walked out to the shop when she walked out under the carport. Well, now she knew I was out under the carport. But I was in the shop by the time she came to the carport. One of the kids came and told me she was out in the carport. Well, Paul brought the baby out to me in the workshop. He had wanted to show me how Don had straightened up out there. So I just took the baby, walked on out of the workshop, and walked on over to Aunt Emma's house. So I never did see her. Never did see her. Because we went to the cemetery to look at the flowers. Went back out. And see how they had arranged them, and on the way back I saw Paul headed up the road, and so when I got back, they sure enough they had left. He'd carried her back to Jackson. But you know what she did yesterday? Paul came down here yesterday, and he said, now when I take her back today, that's her last trip down here. You won't have to worry about her coming back anymore. We were sitting in the living room. We'd been to Gainesville and talked with this woman, and come back, and Paul and I were in the living room, and this car drove up. We thought it was Betty, and I said, who is that? And Paula says, Betty. She looked out the window. She says, no, it's not. It's Marie. And Paul had the funniest expression on his face. Well, she was coming in the carport in that way, and as I told Paul, I said, well, I'm going to walk over to Betty's house. And I just walked right out the front door and went on over to Betty. And I was calm then. I mean, I wasn't upset about her coming. If I'd been upset, I could have stayed right there and, you know, probably gotten into it with her. Because if she'd have spoken to me, she and I would have been into it. So it was just
that.
Well,
you have to do that at funeral places like that, isn't it?
Well, under the circumstances, I mean, I don't feel that I have anything to say to her, not even under that circumstance where there's a funeral. I still don't have to speak to that woman. Under no circumstances do I intend to speak to her. Why should I?
But you were calm, and that's...
I was calm. I was calm about the whole thing. But I know darn well she thought she'd find me out there. I mean, I don't think she came back by there for any other reason. And she'd been to Inverness. But Paul wasn't expecting her to come. After they drove off from over there, I had Paula call over and see if she had gone, and she had. And I said, well, ask him if he's expecting them back. He said, wasn't expecting them in the first place. But at any rate,
well, yeah, tell me about somebody in your family.
Somebody in my family?
Yes. You have a pretty lively family of your own, but the ones you think of most is Grandma Rawlinson.
Grandma Rawlinson?
Isn't that right?
Yeah, I guess I know more about Grandma Rawlinson, although Grandma Denton was the one who lived with us, you know, that we lived with.
Well, I never heard anyone speak of Grandma Denton.
Well, see, Grandma Denton died in, let's see, 47, 45. I was 18 when she died.
Yeah. But it's Grandma Rawlinson that you...
Well, yeah, Grandma
about.
Rawlinson and her cassava puddings. You don't know what cassava pudding is either.
No, I
know. You know what cassava is?
No.
You don't know what the cassava plant is?
No.
Grows more down in the southern part of Florida, but that's where they got their... what it grows from is a stalk, because it has the way the leaves grow, very beautiful plant.
Yeah.
And it has little notches all up as the leaves, you know, die off and break off. It leaves a little ridge all the way up everywhere that's one of the leaves. But the it has a root plant like a tapioca, very starchy, and it grows to be about so big around, and it has a fiber on the outside of it. And then like a rope right through the middle, a cord in the middle, and this other pulp sort of on the outside of it. What she did with it, and she's the only one I know of that made cassava pudding, was to take that outer fiber off. And then she had a grater that was a homemade grater, you know, with nail holes in it and a piece of galvanized, I guess it was galvanized tin, rounded, you know, and on a piece of board. And then you use one size nail to puncture through to make this grater, you know, the right size to grate the cassava. And you grate off and you get a milky substance, but very starchy.
Mm-hmm.
And she put the pure butter and the pure eggs and cream in it, you know, and mixed it up and put it in a shallow pan. And when it bakes and it gets a golden brown on top and it gets cold, you cut it into slices. And it sets up because of the starch in it. It makes it firm, but it's delicious. Just delicious.
And you have clear recollections.
I have clear recollections of cassava pudding.
Isn't that?
And grapefruit pie. Have you ever eaten grapefruit pie?
And not just the talk of it.
Hmm?
And not just the talk of it.
You can remember how it tastes and not just... You can remember
I can remember exactly how it tastes. And she's the only one I know of that made grapefruit pie.
Well, now,
she did it, and she used leftover biscuits to do this with.
I never knew much about it, you know. But I didn't realize she cooked.
Well, Mrs. Herlong, the old lady Herlong who died, you should have known her. She's a little tiny woman.
First
Mrs. Herlong.
Yeah.
She was a little tiny woman, and Natalie.
Yeah.
And she was just very, very dignified and a real little Southern lady.
Yes, from
South Carolina. And, so she used to go out there to buy butter and milk and eggs from Grandma Rollison.
Oh, really?
But they used to say that Grandma Rollison's, Ms. Herlong used to say that her floor was clean enough that she'd eat off of it. Well, I never did think it was clean enough to eat off of, but she always thought it was scrubbed, you know, and so clean that she'd eat off of Grandma Rollison's floor. But, Mrs. Barr can remember. She can tell you all about Grandma Rawson's butter, because that's all she would have until Grandma Rawson quit making butter, Rosebud Bar.
Well, now, was that when she was out on the...
Well, that's the only place she ever lived.
I see.
The only place she ever lived. Her first few, last few months were in the nursing home.
Oh, I see.
But she was on that place from 19... They came here from South Florida in about, let's see, Mama was born in 1904. Must have come up here about 19... 8, 9, or 10, somewhere along in that range,
yeah.
And settled on that property out there, and they lived there.
And they came up.
They came up
most
from South Florida.
Come down.
No, they're from Floridians from, in fact, somewhere back in the generations that they're Seminole Indian on one side.
Yeah.
I think this is in my grandmother's father. I believe my grandmother's father was part Seminole Indian. His name was Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Parkers down around Goulds, Florida. But down in the homestead areas, I believe is where they came from. So Mama can tell you lots of things. She can tell you about the way they used to go over to the beach, just like kids do today, you know, go over to the beach and sleep in their cars overnight and stay on the beach. Kids do it today. And
they came up. Are they crackers down below us?
Crackers? I guess you'd call them crackers. Yes.
I guess so.
They're
yes.
in the.
Yes.
The Partons are somewhere back in the. And of course, they're cattle people.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Of course, they're Rollisons. There are lots of Rollisons down around Lakeland and in that area. And some of my grandfather's brothers were down in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me check the sidewalks.
Yeah, I've got to.
Stay put just a minute, Juanita. Just like now, you don't like Miss Sasson, but I really mean it, unless you think that you...
Well, I'm going to need to get back over there. I don't know how long Aunt Emmy planned to stay, and I left Aunt Emmy with Big Mama and Mrs. Anderson, Pearl Anderson is her name. And the lady that's over there that I hope will work out.
You remember the setting on the fertilizer?
Same.
Same, Frank.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
no, my grandma Rollison was a good cook too, and they were another one that wanted plenty of food on the table.
They had
first electricity up in this part of the woods. They had a Delco plant sitting. I can remember the old base for the Delco plant sitting out there in the barn, concrete base. And Grandpa used to raise watermelons, and he had some of the finest watermelons in this country. Really fine melons. That was his money crop. And then he raised his corn for his hogs and what have you. But Grandma, of course, her weakness was her milk cows, and taking care of her milk cows and her chickens.
Yes.
And she made that butter right up until she could no longer navigate. She made the butter, and she'd send it to town, and I don't think the butter was any different than, you know, as she got older than it was years before. But there were customers when Mom and Daddy had the Red and White store.
Yeah.
And they just had standing orders for Grandma Rollison's butter.
Yeah.
And and every time it came in, well, you just put it up for this one and that one and that. Flora Richardson tell you about Grandma Rawson's butter too, and the eggs and what have you.
Yes.
And until it was against the law to sell fresh milk from the farm, well, she bottled her milk.
Yeah.
She had her own bottles and caps and everything, you know, and very clean with it, and always clean with, you know, her milk and what have you. And she bottled it and sent it to town, and they sold her milk and her eggs and her butter and this type of thing.
Yeah.
So she had all her own household money with this type of thing.
Well,
and she dearly loved it.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of house? What was that old home place out there?
Well, the home place is the old house that's sitting there now. You know, it's
green?
Behind the trailer. No, not
oh,
the green
the
one. Behind the trailer is the old home place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not much of a house.
No, it isn't. Not today. You know, when you don't live in anything, it goes to pot. But they kept it up, and it was there was a dining room and a kitchen, and then there were bedrooms. There was three, four bedrooms. It was a great big porch sort of, and it was screened on one side, but it was surrounded, you know, by living room, dining room, and, I mean the dining room and the kitchen in the back, and then up the other side. I don't know how they managed when they had so many kids at home.
Yes,
I don't
now
know.
All the parts are there, but it's just run down.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's behind Stanley's trailer.
Mm-hmm. That's behind Stanley's trailer. Mm.
Yes, but you never recognize that for a homestead.
No, but it was. That was the homestead. But then this other. Have you ever been down the road going down to Mama's behind the old Baptist church down where Mama lives?
I've been down that way.
Where the McNeelys are settling.
Mm-hmm. I don't know anything.
Well. Going from Florence's place on around, straight on around the lake and coming in where V.J. Herlong lives and going on up the hill and the old house over on the left that's gone to pot, going down.
Past J. Herlong.
Coming to town, past J.'s. Up at the top of the hill.
I know where
you
old house is up there. Is that what you're talking about?
You're not talking about the Symington house that the Myers are in.
No.
You're talking about the one, the old Denton place down the highway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I mean down
the
dirt road.
Looking out over the lake.
No, that's Mama's.
That's
the new house. They built that in 54. I'm talking about this house was built back at the turn of the century in about 1900.
Well, that's
the
Denton house.
That's the Denton house.
Oh,
now that house is a two-story house.
That's after you leave the Baptist
church. It's a two-story house that's completely abandoned and has been for years.
Oh.
Well, see, it belongs to an estate.
Oh.
And the heirs to the estate do not want to sell it.
Yeah.
They don't want to sell a place. My aunt would have bought the place years ago, but they won't even put a price on it. John Paul Jones wants that house because his grandfather built it, and he'd like to have it. It was his grandfather or his great grandfather. I believe it might have been his great grandfather that built it. You know who I'm talking about, the head of journalism. Well, his grandfather or great-grandfather on his mother's side built that place. His name was McCready. But the only heir to the estate that's of sound mind is in Turkey. And she's already inherited all of her mother's and father's property in Montgomery, Alabama, and he was a contractor there. Her husband is well-to-do enough, and they have no thoughts of selling this place. They think someday it'll be worth more than it is now, and they don't need the money now, and mm-hmm. so they just leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul got in touch with them. I think that he did, and to see if they wanted to sell it. And I know my aunt wrote them, and she corresponds with Jerry, this cousin that's over in Turkey. But they don't talk about wanting to sell it.
Let me tell you, when you need.
But that house has seven gables.
Oh really?
You didn't know that, did you?
No.
Well, if you look at it sometime, you'll find seven gables.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Anytime you need to go, you just get up and run and run. Because
we could talk day and night.
Yeah, yeah. But it's so much fun.
You now, let me tell you, what's the best way? You know, just 15, 20 minutes, half hour, that's nice. And these things you tell me, I don't know. You know, it's surprisingly how little information passes.
That's
hands.
Right, but how many people do you find that want to listen to that kind of conversation? You know,
well,
talk about things in the past. That's
just,
right.
No, it makes people who don't know about it.
That's
just,
right. Mm-hmm.
Just know
yeah,
it.
Not necessarily the past.
Well, now, see that house, and the reason why, now, my dad put money into the old house down there, you know, as far as over the years.
Yeah.
There were two boys and a girl.
Yeah.
Now,
you,
their
you
father.
Know.
Yeah.
I don't help you. Let me tell you. You talked about that old house once, and I just intrigued. I just can't wait to sort of hear some of that again. That's truth, Faith. I can't tell you what
but
you
see,
said.
See, that house is built with a kitchen and dining room off the back and a walkway, an open walkway but covered, going back to it.
Yeah.
And up at the front of the house, there's a living room and a bedroom and two more bedrooms, and upstairs there's two bedrooms and two bedrooms upstairs. It's a big house.
I've often. Well, it'd be fun to just look at it sometime,
yeah.
wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a bookcase over there, and it was a beautiful bookcase, and when Dorothy moved, she was having, I just sort of left it stored over there at her house because I didn't take it to Crystal River with me. And it had glass doors on the front.
Yeah.
I'll be here the rest of the night.
Well, we don't want this time
but
to
somebody
get out
stole that bookcase before I could get it out of there.
Well, if I'd known it was there.
You would have gotten it. But there were
I'm coming on out. I want to wrap this cake and just let you take it on with you. We're coming over a little later,
but a bunch of the
hippie
type people were going over there.
And that's the end of this first talk with Juanita by herself this Sunday afternoon, the 15th of November, 1970, and that beautiful, warm west wind, humid west wind has changed to the north, has shifted to north. That's the end of Channel 1 Over, the end of Channel 1 Over. On Sunday afternoon, the 15th of November, the first talk with Juanita by herself at the kitchen table this Sunday afternoon, the 15th of November, 1970. And Cookie and Franklin and I will have been putting in another piece of rye out there. This is the end of Juanita's first visit this Sunday afternoon, 15th of November.